Yes, sir.
Chairman, I'd like to introduce Mr. Stephen Mayne.
Good afternoon, Chairman. I've got a couple of issues to start with and then I'll let someone else to go. I'd just like you to talk a bit about the relationship with Lendlease. How is it? After we gave them the flick last year, we're working with them on Rouse Hill and Twin Waters. Is that just a legacy thing and it's a strained cooperation, or do we have a happy working relationship? And I'd like to draw your attention to the situation in Melbourne where we own 530 Collins, one of the best towers in town, and ANZ are expiring in 2009. They've got about three quarters of the building, and the most likely outcome is they're going to go down to Docklands with Lendlease. So when this happened last time with the big bank going down to Docklands with Lendlease, GPT ends up with National Docklands, so good relationship. We've got the developer relationship, we pick up the asset. Can't see Badcock and Brown being able to potentially deliver something like that. So could you just talk a little bit about the Lendlease relationship and also just explain how that $45 million farewell payment finished up only being $16.5
million? Maybe if I'll start with the Lendlease relationship. We continue to work with Lendlease in a number of areas. As you mentioned, firstly in residential, we have two joint ventures with Lendlease, being Rouse Hill and Twin Waters. Those joint ventures continue as they did before. We have a very professional relationship with them, both having the same objective of maximising value out of those two developments. We also have a relationship with one of the funds managed by Lendlease, being Australian Prime Property Fund, that owns three shopping centres jointly with us, together with a office asset as well. Once again, relationship's very, very good, very strong, hasn't really changed, but it's a professional relationship through ownership. In terms of other relationships, Bovis Lendlease continue to do work for GPT, but unlike the relationship that existed before where GPT had a exclusive relationship with Bovis Lendlease, GPT is now in a position to choose the best construction management firm for the job. That may well be Bovis Lendlease, but it will depend on price, performance and capability going forward. So on all those relationships, I don't think anything's changed. As I say, the best way to describe it is professional and ongoing relationship. In terms of opportunity going forward, we don't really see there being any significant disadvantage to GPT going forward. If you look at over the last 10 years of the assets that GPT has acquired, owned or developed, there is only very few that were actually acquired from Lendlease or developed in conjunction with Lendlease. National Docklands happened to be one of those, but it was one of a very few.
Okay, the second question deals with our retail asset shuffling. Obviously, there was a lot of criticism last year when we palmed off Penrith and Woden Plaza and the option over Sunshine Plaza to Westfield at book value, which I think a lot of people thought was basically a $100 million plus gift to Westfield just so they'd vote in favour of the internalisation proposal. But the rationale put up at the time was that we needed to raise some capital to fund the joint venture with Badcock's in Europe, and that this raised the capital that would then be put into that joint venture. We fast forward 6 or 7 months and suddenly we're finding a spare $621 million to buy 50% of High Point in Melbourne. And if I can just quote from The Australian on Saturday as to what they thought of that price. One source told The Australian the Beestons had hoped to get over $500 million for the stake, but were staggered at the amount of money thrown at them by the fund managers. In the end, GPT paid $621 million, claiming it would yield 5.5%. Industry experts still cannot make the deal stack up on those numbers and say the price reflected a 4.8% yield on High Point's current income. The first time a big commercial property asset has sold for a sub-5% yield in Australia. Even the lowies, unquestionably among the smartest players, could not believe the price paid for High Point. At a meeting between Frank Lowy and Mark Beeson last Christmas, it's rumoured a private agreement was reached which effectively gave Lowy the opportunity to match the last price off of High Point. If true, Lowy let the opportunity pass through to the keeper. So what we appear to have here is that we've done an absolute sweetheart deal with Westfield, sold off some of our prime assets at book value, handing over hundreds of millions of dollars of value on the basis that we need the capital to redeploy elsewhere, and then we've gone and splashed what looks to be the most over-the-top price in Australian shopping centre history, and the Lowy's had the last option on that, and of course are just laughing at us now. And so GPT's just been laughed at for having gone over the top. So what's going on here? I mean, everyone's saying there's a bubble in retail. We're selling assets at book value and then going over the top buying more. I mean, it doesn't seem to make sense. And I think you need to give us a detailed explanation as to how you've become a bit of a laughing stock by going so far over the top with this $621 million play for Highpoint.
If I could answer that. Those comments are just clearly wrong. And maybe if I address them in the order that you put them. The first one was in relation to the transactions that were undertaken last year. We made it very clear at the time that we believe that the transactions, when looked at as a whole, created significant value for GPT security holders. It was impossible to look at the transactions in isolation. In isolation, you would not have sold the retail assets to Westfield, and we acknowledge that, but equally in isolation we wouldn't have created value by internalising management, and in isolation we probably wouldn't have created enough value by simply doing the joint venture with Babcock and Brown. What we said very clearly at that time was that by undertaking the three transactions, the three elements that I went through in the presentation this afternoon, that we believed those transactions could create significant value for GPT security holders. The independent expert that undertook the review of the transaction for the uniholder meeting at that time reached the same conclusion and in fact estimated that the value was in the order of $880 million. The reality today is that if you sit down and work out what GPT's distributions today would be and capitalise that at, say, 7%, which is the yield around about where GPT was trading, you get a figure in the order of about $3.40 at best for GPT's share price. It's been trading as high as $4.20. Multiply that out by the $2 billion worth of shares, or 2 billion shares that GPT has, that's $1.6 billion worth of value that's been created by those transactions. In our view, that justifies the transactions undertaken with Westfield, the joint venture with Babcock and Brown, and the internalisation of management. Moving on to your second question in relation to Highpoint. Highpoint we have bought on a yield of 5.8%. We've made that clear to all and sundry. If papers or other people choose to write something else, that's up to them. We've priced Highpoint based upon what we believe can be achieved in terms of total returns going forward. Highpoint is one of the best shopping centres in the country. It has significant development potential. It has enough land to increase its size by around 50,000 square metres, has zoning approval for around 20,000 square metres, has occupancy costs in the order of around 14, in the low 14s, which is very low for Australian super-regional shopping centres, and has productivity in excess of $9,000 a square metre. It's an excellent centre which is going to generate great returns for our security holders.
Stephen, are you finished? Okay. Thanks for those comments. And if we're a laughing stock, then I think that's and can create $2 billion worth of value, then a long way may we be a laughing stock. Someone else?
Just in the absence of anyone else, Chairman, just a couple of clarifications. The $45 million to Lendlease, how did that change in payment come about?
I'll answer that if you like. We originally agreed with Lendlease that as we were moving forward towards the, I'm going back in history now, towards the meeting to internalise management, that we would have their agreement on the transfer of staff and systems. you know, by mutual agreement. And that in return, they sought a payment of $45 million. You might recall, and I can't remember the exact timing, but about 3 or 4 weeks before the Uniholder meeting was due, they changed their mind about supporting the process, as a consequence, sought to keep the staff and basically weren't going to cooperate. So the $45 million payment or offer was taken off the table. Later, agreement was reached a lower figure.
And how do we go on the hiring phase? Like, what was our strike rate? We seem to be full of, the board and management, full of former Lend-Lease people, which is good. I think that's good continuity. Probably one for you, Chairman, as well. How do we go in terms of, obviously, you know, you size up the talent and you make offers across the board. Did we bat at 70% of who you wanted, or, you know, were there a couple of key ones we missed out? I know we've got all of them are great. Everyone that we've got is terrific. But give us an honest assessment about how that went, given they were being so adversarial and even locked us out at one point.
The managing director wants to talk at the start, but I'll give you a comment as well.
In terms of the staff, we were very pleased with the outcome of our recruitment. We approached approximately 200 people at Lend-Lease, our former colleagues, and these were key staff right across all areas of management, including portfolio management, asset management, property management, leasing, etc. We were very successful with only about a handful not joining us. Generally, that was for two reasons. One was we weren't able to provide childcare facilities at the MLC Centre yet, but we will have that shortly. And secondly, a couple of people had very long employment histories with Lend-Lease, and therefore the tax consequences of leaving was very high. So we were very pleased with what we've achieved. We've got a fantastic group of people who are totally committed to getting the best outcome for our security holders, and as you mentioned, great continuity and expertise and experience across the board.
Okay, and just what happened with Sunshine Plaza? That was one of the three that Westfield were going to get at book value. They've pulled out. I mean, they'd be mad, wouldn't they, not getting an asset like that at book value in this current market? What happened?
Sunshine Plaza, we announced that the transaction with Westfield was for the sale of the interest in Woden and Penrith, that is the 50% interest in Woden and Penrith, and effectively an option over Sunshine Plaza, subject to APPF, which is the co-owner of Sunshine Plaza, waiving their preemptive right over our 50% interest. They had a preemptive right. The whole purpose of the transaction was to say that, you know, that had to be cleared by APPF before Westfield would be able to acquire it. APPF did not want to relinquish their preemptive right, and therefore Westfield's option to acquire that interest lapsed, and GPT, as a consequence, still owns 50% of Sunshine Plaza. The matter, though, I should say, went to court as APPF were disputing whether or not the preemptive had already been exercised as a result of the option. We were obviously of the firm opinion it hadn't, and the court ruled in our favour. APPF has since appealed that decision, and that will go back before the courts in June of this year.
And did we have to compensate Westfield in any way?
No.
Okay. Just one other one, picking up on that hotel trust issue. You look at Macquarie Bank, and they run, you know, a separate office fund, retail funds and European funds. We seem to be going, we have gone down the omnibus approach where, you know, everything's in the one structure. And the hotel trust would move away from that. And you flagged that there's a few issues about the structures of how we own our hotels. Can you tell us a bit philosophically about how you're going to approach that in the future? I mean, Ken Moss would well know the value created when Boral demerged. Demerging is the flavour of the month. Everyone's doing it. Is that something we would look at? If you did an analysis and figured that breaking it up into the component parts would create more value, is that something you'd look at?
Absolutely. That's the analysis we do all the time in everything that we look at in terms of GPT's portfolio structure. is to review whether the assets are performing and whether they deliver more value as part of the portfolio or better value as being separated or sold. I think you will find that GPT will not only own assets in its own right, but be a fund manager of assets. We've made that clear, I think, in the presentation that we see a funds management business as a an important part of our strategy going forward. To date, every time we've done that review, it hasn't created value, but that's not to say it might not in the future, and there's certainly a lot of merit in GPT having a funds management business alongside its property ownership, but it's something which we look at all the time.
Okay, this is my last general question. I was talking to a federal Liberal politician the other week who has some involvement with Indigenous policy, and he made the comment that the Indigenous community at the Rock is one of the most catastrophic in the country. It's just got enormous social problems, and the contrast with, say, Kakadu are very stark. Now, I don't want to bang on too much about corporate social responsibility, but given that you have on your doorstep there a massive social issue, what is the company's approach to dealing with that, even though I appreciate it's not your primary responsibility, but it is a sacred asset there and there is a massive social problem. What sort of programs are you running to deal with that?
Thanks for the question. No, we actually do see it as our responsibility and a very important one. It's one that we've been focused on throughout the ownership of Ayers Rock Resort since 1997. There are a number of initiatives. You're right in outlining the situation at the Mutujulu community, which is the community between the resort and the Rock. It is very desperate stuff, and we have undertaken a number of initiatives to try and assist in that regard. Some of those initiatives include the introduction of the Mutujulu Foundation, which is a foundation which we've sponsored, which has raised a significant amount of money, which is being applied to the education and employment of the Indigenous community around Ayers Rock Resort. The second one has been employment programs within the Rock for Indigenous people. And a third one you might have caught up on in recent times is we have been significant advocates of the rollout of opal fuel to Indigenous communities right throughout the country. We do see it as part of our responsibility and one we take very seriously, and we'll continue to apply resources to it.
The board has a policy fully endorses everything that Nick said. If we had a magic wand, we would most certainly wave it in that community and all Indigenous communities that suffer, many of them, from similar problems. The challenges are enormous. The goodwill is enormous. And the solutions are just tough. The simple things such that have been tried, swimming pools. Shane Gould, the famous Olympian, was in our office just a month ago. She and her partner have been working in Indigenous communities as part of a government program in WA based on No School, No Pool. And it's run by the communities themselves, but where people such as, say, GPT might provide assistance in that regard for coaching and so on. And that has, by virtue of the nature of a swimming pool, there are health benefits, there are sporting benefits, they're practical things. We believe the way forward is trying many of these things, and we have to be careful because there are lots of people with good intentions who want to come in or fly in and fly out, and usually that doesn't work, and those communities themselves have become deeply suspicious and cynical of that. But you certainly have touched a point on which we're very sensitive to and very aware of. As far as the staff of GPT is concerned, getting back to your earlier point, GPT, as you have heard me speak before, tries to stand for something where people feel it is a workplace that they want to come to and be part of, where it is inclusive, and where there is a lot of excellence, a lot of innovation, and a lot of respect. We believed in choice, and that people that came that would have to choose between GPT and Lendlease, that simply that there ought to be a level playing field and that they would have choice. Now, most of them came to GPT and exercised that choice. There was no pressure applied. There was a level playing field, and I think that obviously many of them have worked on GPT business for a long time, and we do share a common heritage and the founding story with Lendlease. We respect that, but there are different paths now, and we are each on our own particular path.
Mr. Akinchem, would have been nice if you could have had a show of hands on these resolutions today, just so that it shows a bit more respect for those who bother to turn up. You can get a sense of the mood of the meeting, as opposed to just having faceless institutions who don't turn up or speak, dominating the poll. Look, my only minor worry about Mr. Joseph is I think he's got a bit of a habit of going weak at the knees when he comes up against a billionaire. If you go back to ANI, when Kerry Packer threw ANI one of the worst hospital passes ever thrown in corporate history in Australia, ANI and Smorgon subsequently dropped well over $500 million on the notorious Holter business in Europe. And Mr. Joseph's response was to run a campaign to vote off Ross Palmer from the board, Ross Palmer being the only director who wanted to actually get to the bottom of the situation and find out what had gone on and have an independent inquiry. So the whole perception from this episode was that the infamous Packer power had basically got to Mr. Joseph. Then you have the Westfield deal last year when another billionaire comes along and we're offering three shopping centres at book value in what looks like a sweetheart deal, and whilst this last one's probably more to do with management, we then have another billionaire in Mr. Beeson offering up his shopping centre, and we get out the chequebook for $621 million. So I guess I worry, given that history of ditching Ross Palmer because he was, quote, a disharmonious and disruptive director, when he was just trying to get to the bottom of a bit of a corporate scandal, I just worry a bit about his approach in standing up for the independent small shareholders when he comes up against a really big gorilla out there, be it Packer, be it Lowy, or be it more latterly, Mr. Beeson.
Well, thank you for your comment and your history lesson. Some of us might have other recollections than yours of that history. However, I don't think there's any necessity for Mr. Joseph to respond to that, because I can tell you, having served on this board with Mr. Joseph for the period of time that he's been on the board, and going through the times that we went through for a 12-month period, that I didn't notice any weakness at the knees in front of billionaires or millionaires or corporate giants or anything else. And I think shareholders are able to see the results that have occurred under his leadership, and I think they stand for themselves.
Sorry for being so negative, Chairman. I've got to justify spending the $300 to my wife for the flight up from Melbourne. So if I just come here and say you've done a great job, I'll...
Gee. You've got a business to run. We understand that, Stephen.
And I've sold my business, so I have no vested interest now. I just wanted to cover a couple of things. I've got no problems with this pay rise. I know, Chairman, your pay has gone from 120 to 300 as a result of this internalisation proposal, which isn't bad work. But 300 is about on the money in terms of companies of a comparable size. Just in terms of this new director, the biggest protest vote today was against Mr. Latham, who got more than 10% against There'd only probably be 20 top 100 companies in Australian history that have had more than 10%.
No, it's actually less than 10, Stephen.
It was 127 million.
Well, we'll check. We'll do the math later.
Okay. It was double the opposition to your vote, and it was bigger than the opposition for the REM report. Now, I'm suspecting what's happened here is the institutions don't think he's independent because of his history with Lendlease. Is that right?
I can't answer that question. All I can say is that we couldn't have a finer director than Malcolm, and I don't know.
Look, I think it's terrific to have relevant experience, but I know that institutions can get a bit, box-ticking in their ways about independence, and I think it is a good point with GPT, because if you look at the board now, we've got a couple of the Babcock faction. We've got a lot of Lendlease and GPT, Lendlease history. Now, we haven't got too many directors who are independent of those two groups. Now, Babcock's, they're pretty sharp operators. They push the envelope sometimes. If things go pear-shaped with Babcock's, you're going to need a couple of directors who are genuinely independent, who don't have a vested interest in the proposal, aren't connected to it, who could step up and say, we're not doing the hotel JV, or, this isn't working too well. So I just say to you, in terms of this proposal, I think we do need another genuinely independent director, and I think on those grounds that this resolution should be supported. And I hope you do try and find someone who isn't connected with the old management at Lendlease or Babcock's, because we have more than enough experience on board at the moment.
Okay. Well, thank you for those comments and thank you for that support, and they will be independent. And let me say that as far as this board is concerned, it could just about write the book on independence, and I don't think it's ever been found wanting in terms of understanding what its roles and responsibilities are. And the reality is that in any of these things, there are always going to be conflicts, and it's how you manage them, and it's how you disclose them. And if there are conflicts in certain situations, then. You declare that, and the board acts accordingly. And I can also assure you, Stephen, that we don't have factions. It's a very cohesive and well-working board.